Good afternoon, welcome, and thank you for inviting me to speak this afternoon. It's a gorgeous day out. I'm surprised there are so many people who are hanging on. It must be an exciting topic. If you all remember back a couple years ago, the summer of 2008, you may remember that gasoline was over $4 a gallon, heating oil was going up to almost $5 a gallon, and oil was trading at $147 a barrel. It was a real wake-up call in a state like Maine, which is the most oil-dependent state in the entire country. 80% of our homes heat with oil. Almost all of us, I bet, drive a car, and oil is a fundamental part of the things we do day to day. And for fishermen, I'm sure it was a real reawakening too. Well, at that time, the governor started looking to the ocean because people started talking about the vast energy resource in our ocean, and looking to the ocean and the ocean, the winds, the waves, and the tides as a source of energy, not only to keep the lights on and run our computers, but also to heat our homes and to ultimately, someday, hopefully, go to an electric vehicle, electric transportation. So the governor created the Ocean Energy Task Force, which I had the good fortune to be a co-chair of with Don Perkins, president of the Gulf of Maine Research Institute. Many people in the room, can you keep that going? Back on the first slide. Gulf of Maine Research Institute. George LaPointe was on the task force. Kathleen Layden is here. I think there are probably other people. Many people here came to our meetings and participated in the working of the task force. So we had two products, one piece of legislation that was passed last year, which I'll talk about in a minute, and another piece that's going to be heard this year. The final report of the task force was issued in December, and if you can find it online, I have a copy here if anyone would like to look at it. It's at the maine.gov at the State Planning Office website. And it's full of information about our ocean energy resources as well as recommendations from the task force. So with that, I'm going to, we're now on this slide. Go back.
I'm usually pretty good at this job.
Okay. Well, together we could probably manage it. The Ocean Energy Task Force was convened, as I said, in November of 2008. And previously we had had a task force looking at our onshore wind resource. And that task force came up with a series of recommendations that resulted in legislation that had really helped Maine to become a leader in the siting and permitting and development of a Maine very good onshore wind resource. As you can see here, they set goals of 2,000 megawatts of onshore wind by 2015 and 3,000 by 2020. As of today, we have permitted 430 megawatts, and some of those are a lot of that is still operating, some of it is permitted but not yet built, and under development we have another over 400 megawatts. The way we did that is we streamlined and made more efficient the permitting process. We identified areas in the state of Maine where you could use the streamlined process, and other areas you can't. And we revised some of our regulations to specifically address issues for wind. Maine is now the leader in all New England states of the amount of wind that has been constructed onshore, and we hope to continue to lead in New England. So next slide. So if you look at a map of the country and you look at the wind resource, so you can see here from this map, the red areas, which are the highest wind resource, red and purple, our best winds are offshore and in the Great Lakes. And so that's why people have started looking offshore. And they're also in very close proximity to the load centers of the Northeast, where the population is. Another great resource is, of course, in the Midwest, And there is talk about harnessing that and bringing it over huge transmission lines to the east. But we actually are want to explore more of our offshore resource and not have to bring it so far. In addition, if we were to site those transmission lines from the Midwest, they would also be bringing coal-fired power to us. If we're just building transmission lines from offshore wind, that's really all they would be bringing. So, next slide. So if you look at the evolution of the technology and how much wind resource we have at various water depths, you'll see here that as the farther out to sea you go, the better, the more wind resource we have. If you look at the shallow water technologies that are being developed, like in Europe, and then have been proposed off the coast of Massachusetts, New Jersey, Maryland, and Delaware, has about 6 gigawatts or 6,000 megawatts of a resource there. But if you go farther out to the deep water, and these are resource estimates. These don't take into account other environmental or recreational issues that would reduce the amount of wind. It's just pure raw wind resource. You get up to 133 gigawatts or 133,000 megawatts, which is huge. The ISO New England, the demand in New England is around 32,000. So you can see that this just dwarfs that. You go to the next slide. So as I said, the task force has two products. Last year, we introduced legislation that would set up a process for the temporary testing and demonstration of new technologies that are currently not commercially viable. And the primary technology that we were aiming at was these deep water floating platforms that you'll hear about from Des in a little bit. What the law did is it established a 90-day general permit process. So if you meet all the requirements of the law, you submit all the studies and that you need and all the applications that you need, you will get a permit from the Department of Environmental Protection in 90 days. You still need an Army Corps permit, and we can't predict how long that might take, but from the state anyway, you would get a permit in 90 days. And these technologies can only be in the water for a limited amount of time, and there only can be a limited number of items in equipment in the water. The law charged the State Planning Office and the Department of Conservation with identifying up to 5 sites in state waters where this testing and demonstration could occur. And they started that process last June or July and met their deadline of December 15th to identify sites. If you go to the next slide, 3 sites were identified. They worked extensively with fishermen and others, members of the public in the general planning area. There are several very large general planning areas that were identified, and it got narrowed down to these very relatively small test sites, which were based on the input we got from fishermen and other members of the public who use this area as to where these projects, this testing and demonstration could occur with the least amount of conflict. So if you see the site, there is a site off of Boone Island, a site off of Monhegan, and a site off of Damersco. Now, we were charged because the University of Maine, as you probably know, and we'll hear from Neil a little later, has move forward with the Deep Sea Wind Consortium to come up with, to try and develop a new floating technology for deep water wind. And so one of these sites was to be the university site, and that is the site off of Monhegan. The state selected that as their site. The university has received over $20 million of federal dollars to proceed with the testing and demonstration of these new technologies. So go to the next slide. Okay, now I'm going to talk about the bill that was that the task force is recommending for commercial scale. What I was just talking about was testing and demonstration of new technologies, in primarily deep water technologies that haven't been proven yet as commercially viable. We also wanted to look at our laws and get ready for proposals from wind developers, wave energy developers, or others who want to use what's already commercially viable, what's been sited off the coast of Europe and over 1,000 megawatts of shallow water wind power. So we looked at our environmental protection regulations, our submerged land leasing regulations, and all basically state utility regulations to see what do we need to do to be ready if projects come to us and to actually promote projects in appropriate areas. And so we looked at, first of all, we established a goal for offshore wind development of 5 gigawatts by 2030. We want to develop a program to electrify heat and transportation so we reduce our dependence on fossil fuels for heating our homes and powering our cars, and ultimately go to electric heat and transportation sources powered by the vast ocean energy resource that we have in the Gulf of Maine. It also encourages appropriate and adequate transmission and distribution infrastructure, which is critical for wind resources because they're located generally far from the load, and they are an intermittent resource. It also establishes a process to ultimately get to a request for proposals or a competitive solicitation to help develop these projects. And as I said, we looked at the environmental permitting and the submerged land leasing regulations and also our tax structure. Go to the next slide. This is the vision of many people on the task force. Movement from our oil furnaces to ground source and air source heat pumps to heat our homes, and from the gas station of the past to plugging in our cars at home. And I think we can skip, we'll go to the next slide, I'll just go through it real quickly. We wanted to look at electrification of heat and transportation as a way to help pay for offshore wind, wave, and tidal power, which is generally above the current market prices anyway for our electricity. And we also wanted to use it as a way to reduce our carbon footprint and reduce total energy bills for consumers. And we designed a prototype of a program that actually at $3 a gallon heating oil would save a customer their heating costs from day one. So that was some of the objectives that we were trying to get at, and one of the reasons to move forward with ocean energy. You can skip that slide. You can skip that slide. And so, just in summary, you know, how are we going to realize the vision of developing a offshore wind resource, a wave and tidal resource, in an environmentally sustainable manner? So we need to look at our regulations. We need to work with other states, other countries, to know what's going on there, what the lessons they have learned. We need to figure out some creative financing protocols, and then we also have to look at not just generation, but how we site transmission as well. So with that, I hope I did this in, I tried to go fast, I'll leave George to finish up, but we'll be around to answer questions later.